with Luke 5, 1-11, themes of fear and trembling in the presence of the holy, and of a word of consolation followed by sending. We didn't quite get to the sending, you know, when we got Isaiah. That's in verses 9 to 13. But Luke 5, this is lexicon time. If you have a computer program that can do this fast, it'll save wear and tear in your fingerprints, you know, because there's a lot of unusual words in here, but syntax is not too bad. Let's read through the whole thing and then talk about how carefully to avoid allegorizing while still fairly interpreting. Yeah, Eric? Luke 5, 1-11. Yeah. Or as you say to the beginning Greek students who can't read any letters yet, page 167. Right? We've got the, Luke likes this, excuse me, agenita de, or chi agenita, followed by something. And here it's followed by en to plus the infinitive. It's the vayehi of the Septuagint, and it happened that. So you don't even really have to translate it. Or, in this case, we'll go ahead and say, and it happened that, en to plus two infinitives. Epikemai means to lay upon, and figuratively to press, you know, press upon. So, and it happened that, en to plus infinitive, often, almost always, in fact, while the crowd, accusative case, subject of the infinitive, was pressing upon him, Jesus, and akouein, the crowd is still the subject, and they were hearing the word of God, also, autos, he himself. The grammars often say that Luke's use of this, of the, you know, the nominative personal pronoun isn't as emphatic as other authors, so maybe not a huge emphasis, but, and he was standing, nice simple periphrastic, ein est hestos is the perfect participle of histemi, and he was standing, para tein limnein, by the lake, of Gennesaret, maybe, or the lake, comma, Gennesaret. It's indeclinable, so it's hard to tell. Doesn't really matter. Isn't it good news that some of the grammatical points don't really matter, right? Verse 2, and he saw duoploia, two boats. Now let's just take this next hestota, another participle, and we'll take it as just as an adjective because we have two boats standing. I suppose like dead man walking or something like that. He saw two boats that were standing by the lake. So he's by the lake, the boats are by the lake. And the fishermen, hoi aliais, ap auton, from them apobantes, from them disembarking or going from, they had gone from them eplinon. They were plinoing, imperfect, indicative. They were in the process of, give it kind of an ongoing, cleaning the nets, ta dictua. So they had apobinoed, now Jesus embinos, he embarks, he gets in. And after he got into one of the boats, or again, sometimes with these aorist participles in narrative, you know, just, you don't have to give it a real temporal sense, just he got in and, right? This is what Velt elegantly calls a bang-bang participle, just bang-bang, two things happen. Which is a little better from what Daniel Wallace's grammar calls them. He calls them piggyback participles, so take your elegant term, the one you prefer. And getting in, he got into one of the boats. Now let's describe the boat, one of them anyway. Ha, the relative pronoun, which was Simonos of Simon, Simon's. A rotezen, aorist of erotao, he requested him, it's got to be Simon, from the land, ep an agagain, from ep an ago, to lead out away from, right? He requested him to, we'd probably say, put off from shore, right? Alegon. The neuter singular accusative adjective is very often in the New Testament acting like an adverb, a little ways. So alegos means few and acting adverbially a little ways. And kathizes from kathidzo, another bang-bang participle. He sat down, and this kind of fooled me first time I look at it. I mean, he sat down out of the boat. No, wait, ek tu ployu goes with the next verb, right? So he sat down and was teaching from the boat, the crowds. So he continues this ministry of the word, we'll come back to that, from the boat, right? Verse 4, and when hos, we've seen temporal hos in Luke a number of times, so not as comparative, but when epausita lalon. Now, pao is, or palomai, is an interesting verb in that it will often take a participle to complete its action. So in that sense, it's almost periphrastic. It's almost like eimi plus a participle. So you just translate it, you just kind of run roughshod over it and just translate it. And when he stopped or ceased speaking, okay, because lalon is just the present participle from laleo. So again, pao or paomai does this a lot in the New Testament. So when he stopped teaching, he said to the Simon, ep anagago samor, right? Put out into the bathos, into the deep. That's easy enough for vocabulary, bath, deep, bathos, right? And chalao, put down, let down the nets of you, ace agron. An agra is a catch. So ace expressing purpose here for a catch, pretty common. And answering, Simon said, epistata. Now this is, we'll come back to this. Epistata means master. It's used, if I'm remembering right, only in Luke. And in every instance, as you read the pericope, there's a transformation. For instance, one example that comes to mind is the 10 lepers. Jesus cleanses the 10 lepers. They all call him epistata, master, okay? But the only one who calls him Lord is the Samaritan who comes back and falls at his feet. And I think this is, so this use of the title master, I think, is significant. Peter knows Jesus' power here, but he doesn't yet know what? His holiness, which is what he's about to know. So a close tie-in with Isaiah's experience in the temple. So, master, during the whole night, kopiosintes, again, probably just bang, bang, we labored, and we received nothing. But, epito chrematisu, on the basis of your word, chalasso, I will let down the nets. And, tuto poiesintes, and after he had done this, sin ekleson, he closed together, he closed with, he took in a plethos, it's a neuter noun, so that's actually accusative, he took in a crowd of fish, a big one, a pelu plethos, and dia horegnomi means to tear in the middle, and the nets of them began to tear, imperfect, right? And kata neuo is to go like, this won't work on the internet, is to go like this, right? It's to motion, it's to signal, you know? And so you kind of get the picture of these guys are so, you know, they're kind of trying to deal with the situation. They're kind of going, hey, get over here, right? Like that. So he kata neuos to the participants, the metachois, you know, his partners in the other boat. And why? What does he want them to do? To sylabestai. Two plus the infinitive can, and I think here expresses purpose, in order to take with, in order coming, elthantas, to take with them. So come and do this whole thing together with us. And they came, elthan, and epleson, our friend, pimple me, this is the aorist active, and both of the boats were filled. Neuter plural subject, here we have plural verb. Both of the boats were filled with the result, hosta, that they were sinking. They were bithidzoing in the middle, means to sink. And when, now here's the change. And when Simon saw, he prospiptoed, he fell. This is a little bit of an odd expression, and the variant readings reflect it, but we won't fix it. We'll just kind of let it be clear enough. He fell at the knees of Jesus, saying, exelthe, go away from me. Why? Because aner hamartelos eme, I am a sinful man, kyria. See, I think the change in address is significant, okay? Now, let me say just a word about sinner in Luke. Even in America today, you know, if you just talk to the person on the street, you'd probably get an, if you said, do you consider yourself a sinner? You know, the average person would probably say, well, yeah, you know, that's a term that could be applied to me. But if you track hamartelos throughout Luke, and also thinking about the context of Palestinian Judaism, I think Peter is saying something really strong here. I mean, he's not linking himself as sort of an ordinary sinner, but rather, he's sort of confessing a status like the outcasts of society. I mean, you could do the word study yourself, and it's a profitable one to do. So just track hamartelos throughout the Gospel of Luke. Okay, Peter is really, I mean, he is confessing his deepest need and his deepest spiritual poverty. I mean, this is a strong word. It's not just, well, we're all sinners, but the sinners were the outcasts, right? And Peter is here lumping himself with the outcasts. Interesting that he still doesn't quite have the good news yet. He needs to hear one more word from Jesus, sort of like the coal that needed to cleanse Isaiah's lips, right? Depart from me because I am a sinful man, Lord. For, and this happens 55 times in Luke with various, actually counted one time, various words and verbs and nouns, for trembling or amazement peri-echoed, had around him, seized him, and all those with him on the basis of or because of the catch of fish, which the relative pronoun ought to be accusative. It's attracted to the case of ektheon, which they had taken together. And likewise also, now James and John is accusative because also astonishment had seized them, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, who were partners, koinonoi, you know, fellow fishermen with Simon. And he said to Simon, the Jesus said to Simon, now here's the word of gospel, me fabu. Jesus says this a lot. The angels say this when, you know, the shepherds, in the fields watching over their flocks by night, right? Don't be afraid. And here in context, it doesn't always play out this way, but may plus the present imperative can, in context, mean stop doing something that you're already doing. Remember that sort of rule of thumb? That doesn't always apply, so you can't woodenly translate may plus the present imperative that way. But here it works quite well because it's quite clear that Peter is being afraid, right? So here this beautiful word of gospel, simply stop being afraid. And it's kind of like what? You're right, I am the Lord, and you're right, you are a sinner. But my lordship is not the kind of thing from which people who confess themselves to be sinners need to run. I mean, that in itself, I mean, you could preach on that alone, that what a strange kind of holiness this is. It's sort of like the holiness of the Holy One of Israel in the second part of Isaiah that Professor Seleska was talking about. So you don't have to be afraid, even though you are right, I am the Kyrios, and you are right, you are a hamartalos, right? From the now, persons, people, human beings, esse is the deponent future indicative of eimi, and then zogron is from zograo, which means to catch alive, and it's just a periphrastic construction. You will be catching alive men. And, verse 11, before they had epi an ago, now they kat ago, and they lead the boats back to land, epi tein gain, and leaving everything, they, not just he, but James and John and Simon, we assume, together followed him. Now, Jesus' own words invite us to interpret this theologically, right? Because he's the one who makes the move from fishing fish to catching men, see? But you got to be careful, right? You got to be careful on making all the details mean things. And, you know, because where do you stop? And the other interesting thing about this text is that a number of these themes occur repeatedly in the Gospel of Luke, okay? And not just limited, for instance, to an apostle, but the hearing of the Word of God, the confession of sin, astonishment and trembling at Jesus' miracles, and even mission, which in Luke Acts, as you know, is participated in not just by the 12, but by the 70, right? And in Acts 8, by the unnamed disciples who are scattered abroad. So while on one hand this is the calling of St. Peter the Apostle, there are connections that allow for a broader application as well, so that St. Peter can be seen to operate sort of here representatively at the same time that he's clearly, you know, going to be one of the 12. So it's kind of a both and in that regard. So what stands out? It's the Word of God, it's the power of Jesus that transforms Peter's understanding of himself and prepares him for the call to service, right? And that's the kind of thing that you can apply, you know, in various contexts. And I wouldn't push the details of the story, you know. For instance, if the boat is the church, how come the church is starting to sink, right? I mean, if the net is the gospel, how come the nets are starting to tear? See, that's the problem with allegorizing details, is that you arbitrarily begin and then you arbitrarily end, see? But nevertheless, Jesus' own words do invite us to see a corollary here between His word, His power, His transforming word, you know, don't be afraid, and not just fishing for fish, right, but fishing for men and women. So, and it's time to go to class. So you can go fish for, I don't know, dogmatic theology or something.
Question for you.
Yes.
The Lord and the Master Carter.
Yeah, Master and Lord.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Can you explain